Podcasting to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto, you are now tuned in to the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony.
And I'm mercenary... Insane mercenary! Insane mercenary. That's what they say that I am.
What a way to kick off the latest episode featuring everybody's favorite podcast hostess, Daph J. Why are you... Explain to everybody why you are the insane mercenary.
So this is what happened. I was at work, and I heard a band. And I'm like, Eric, I like this song. And he's like, who is it? And I'm like, I don't know. This is the song that, this is what they said in the song.
Right.
This is not the Twitter version.
Not at all. This is not Twitter.
And then I'm like, I don't know. Like, I gotta Google.
You're the twit that can't tweet.
That's terrible.
Go ahead.
So then I'm like, I don't know. I'm gonna Google the lyrics that I heard that I think they said because I like this song. And you're like... You know, what did they say? How did it sound like? I'm like, I don't know. So you tried to Google it based on the facts that I was trying to give you. It didn't work. And then finally, I got a hold of it. And I was like, this is the song. And you're like, no way. And I'm like, I know. And you're like, you like them. I'm like, yeah, I do. And then...
This is a comic book podcast, by the way, in case you guys are wondering what's going on.
Something else had happened. And then... Because it was a weird name... It was something that happened. Oh, and then I was like, you know what other song I heard, Eric? And you're like, yeah. And then I'm like, this song. And you're like...
What was the song? Do you remember any of the names of the songs? Or they just like...
Can I just finish telling this? So you told me, you're asking me a question, I'm answering it. So you're like, really, what's this song? Version. And I'm like, it's this song, but it's from this dude. And you're like, who's the dude? And I'm like, Danny Glover. Nope.
Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. And then you're like, that's Childish Gambino. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And then you're like... Do you know how he got his name? Or did I say, do we know how he got his name?
I think I told you.
You said, and you're like,
what? Because you said to me, how did he get a name of Childish Gambino?
Yeah, like how, really, it comes out like thin air, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, actually, he went to this Wu-Tang site. Like this Wu-Tang, if you could be a Wu-Tang member, what would be your name kind of
right,
thing?
Right,
so it was
right.
A name generator.
Right.
And I was like, no way. And I'm like, I need to know what my name's going to be. So we were messing around and I came up with Insane Mercenary. That was my name. That's what they said. They combined all of my names and it came up with Insane Mercenary. And I think you were the drunk bastard or something like that. I forget what you had.
I had two because it all depends on...
If it's capitalized.
If you put middle name. So my first name was The Scratching Killer, which I feel is the most appropriate name for any people who know me. And my... For those who do know me...
I know where you're going with this. It's terrible.
I know. I've got a lifelong case of eczema. And I just... I'm like a kitten scratching on a post. So The Scratching Killer was absolutely appropriate. I'll stick with it because it sounds somewhat aggressive and sounds somewhat hip-hop-ish, like a DJ scratching. And, you know, who doesn't want to have killer in their name? It just gives them a level of danger. Not that I would kill anybody, but, you know, Scratching Killer is appropriate. The other one was Drunken Prophet.
That's
Drunken,
what it was.
Drunken Prophet, Drunken Criminal. I had a bunch of...
You had a bunch of drunks in there.
You were the insane mercenary.
Yeah.
And every rendition of your name through the Wu-Tang generator was a mercenary or insane. So we'll stick
with... I know I also had assassin.
Yes, insane assassin. Like you were
something
just...
Something like that.
And I think that fits you as well.
But see, if I hadn't told them whole thing...
That was fast 5 minutes.
But if I hadn't, this is what I was going
to
say.
You could have just said I went to a Wu-Tang generator. That's all you had to say. That's all you had to say.
But there's weight behind the story. There's a foundation to this.
You think people want to know what it is. People want the Twitter version.
Yeah, people actually
Donald Trump became president over Twitter.
Oh, no.
You see what could happen if you know how to tell the short version of your thoughts? You can take over the world. You, on the other hand, are going to be like Pinky in the Brain, giving them your plot the whole episode.
Well... It's more entertaining than this psychopath, so.
Daph J, how's it going?
I'm doing my hair.
Very, you're multitasking.
I am. I'm a multitasker.
We are, I think, the first pop culture comic book husband and wife podcast, for those who may not know that. And in case you're wondering why I always ask Dav J how she's doing at the beginning of each podcast, is when we're not podcasting, we don't talk to each other. So sometimes if two weeks have gone by with no episode, it means we haven't talked for that long. We only talk at, like, now.
Is when we're not even really married.
Yeah, we just, it's a marriage of convenience to do a podcast. Just kidding. So, Dav J, we had our last episode having what I think became a profound conversation of the Brian K. Vaughan and Cliff Chang book, Paper Girls.
How do you spell K?
What?
Like, how does he spell his K?
Oh, with a K.
It's just a K? Initial. Just a little? Just a little. Just an actual letter?
Yeah, yeah. Brian.
Oh, it's not like K, like K-A-Y or K-A-E?
No.
It's just K.
Just K.
Because it stands for something.
Probably Ken. It's Kevin.
Okay, it's not just K.
No.
Okay. Because I have friends with the letter K.
Yes.
I mean, there's other letters that follow the K, right. But we pronounce it
right.
K.
Any other than that being his initials?
No, I'm just curious.
Okay.
I'm just curious.
So now we're going to, for this episode, we've both caught up and read Paper Girls Trade Paperback 2.
We sure did.
And without letting too much time lapse, I thought, let's get right back into the thick of things and, what? The thick of things? Buckle down?
Yeah.
Get right back into it and break down this book and see if your appreciation for it, or if your understanding of the book has increased, and whatnot. Before we do that, I have a little bit of Facebook news. Well, news that I saw on Facebook. That's my new friend. There's reports from a DC insider that they previewed the Wonder Woman film.
What?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, word is coming out.
When did that happen? Where?
I'm not sure. Somewhere Warner Brothers, something like the DC
like
insider.
Like in Cali or what?
I just looked at the link. I didn't actually like open and read the whole thing. But based on the headline is that Wonder Woman is a hot mess.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
That's the early preview and word on the street is that it's a disjointed film and it's following in the footsteps of the things that came before it. Now, I haven't seen the film to pass any judgment. I'm just going based off of word of mouth and some internet, you know, word of mouth and things that people are sharing on Facebook and discussing. Does this surprise you? Does it disappoint you? Do you have to wait and see for yourself? Or did you kind of have, like, what's your reaction to that type of news?
It's disappointing. I mean, from what I saw, it looked like it was... I'm sorry, is this the opinion of one internet site?
It's a DC insider. This is like the early reaction to it. And it's kind of what some early reactions to Suicide Squad were like. I didn't hear so much negativity coming out of BVS initially until the movie actually was being reviewed. But Suicide Squad kind of was getting this sort of feedback early. And they started to reshoot and try to make it more accessible or funny. So now to hear, you know, early rumblings. I'm not saying that it is like this, so don't quote me on that. But just early rumbling is that the movie is going to be, you know, not as great as we're expecting it to be or hoping for it to be. Would you... If this movie received similar reviews to what the two previous films have gotten from a critical standpoint, would you still go watch it yourself in the theater opening weekend, or would you be like, you know what, I've already been disappointed thus far, I'm just gonna wait for this sucker and not give him my hard earned money? Like, will it affect you in any way?
I probably wouldn't be in a hurry to go see it. If in fact, it's a repeat of BVS and Suicide Squad. I'm not going to fight a crowd to do it. I'd still want to see it just so I can kind of form my own opinion.
Right.
Because, you know, not everyone liked Man of Steel.
No.
It was dark, and yeah, he killed the guy, and whatevs.
Right, right.
And, you know, why couldn't he save his dad?
Yeah.
But there was a lot of things of it that I did like.
And, I liked Man of Steel myself.
And I don't think that one opinion is the only... That one opinion represents everyone's
right
thought. So... And from what I have seen,
it looks great.
I love the music itself is what would bring me to go see it.
Really? Yeah, you're right. It looks great,
and it pumps me up.
Right, right.
So, I would give it a chance, but depending on the reviews, I don't know how quickly I'd go to see it.
Right, right.
I mean, there's even good movies out there now that I haven't even gone to see because. Lack of time or whatnot, but I'm wanting to go. I'm not gonna not go see it.
Right.
I'll make the time for a good film. Why wouldn't I make one that's kind of mediocre? I want to form an opinion on my own.
Right. My next question is, what do you think is the? Because a lot of people do like these movies. I'm not, you know, just want the opinion of myself or you is not the opinion of everybody, but. For the most part, a lot of people are feeling like the DC films, this universe, is not hitting the mark the way they could be, right? Whether or not you like the movies, they just feel like they're not hitting it out of the park. As far as money's concerned, they're doing well, right? They're making their money.
Well, I think that's the only reason that they can, as long as it's doing well with money, they don't care of the product.
Right. Why do you think it's so hard? That's my question. What do you think is so hard for them to get... a movie that can receive some sort of universal acclaim the way... I'm not saying every Marvel movie is a home run, but for the most part, you feel like it holds together well, you know? Every movie stands on its own, and it's good. Or good to great. And the DC television shows are representing those characters properly, whether you find them cheesy or not. People can say, you know, that's a good representation of this character, right? Why do you think it's so hard for the movies to be have that same sort of reception, in your opinion?
Well. The words found in Romans chapter...
What? What are you talking about?
The scripture where it says, money is the root of all evil.
That is not in Romans.
It's not? Corinthians.
Listen, let's not make this a biblical show.
Timothy?
I think it's Timothy.
There, Timothy. The first and the second... what I'm trying to say is...
I'm waiting. I'm really waiting.
What I'm trying to say is, kind of like...
tries to quote scripture and doesn't even know what... Go ahead.
What I'm saying is, I think at the end of the day, the people who make these movies are just more interested on making money, not making a film, not telling a story. The more explosions, the more action, the more, you know, hoopla... That's what attracts the audience. That's what you want to... That's the thing. Not character development. Not what, in fact, makes someone like you appreciate the build-up of something. I think comic books are so... have lasted for how... It's almost like a telenovela. I mean, there's no...
Or a soap opera for us English people.
No, but, like, you can do a story for years. Yeah. You have a bunch of what's it called when they're in single format?
Yep. Like, it's serialized. They're like episodes.
Right. Right. And imagine, a lot of these stories sometimes go on for months, years.
Oh, yeah. These characters... Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's been...
75 years for some characters.
Exactly.
Right?
There's no hurry to tell a story, have a beginning, a middle, and end.
Yeah.
And in a film, you have a two-hour, three-hour bracket where you have to tell everything, but you want to... They are more concerned in telling it in a way that, oh, let's reach the masses.
The spectacle.
Let's make everybody happy. Let's tell a little bit of a story. let's do some explosions. Let's get someone to kiss for the love story portion. And let's kill somebody. Yeah. Like, they're just trying to do too much too fast. And I think the weight of storytelling is what gets lost in the cracks.
Right.
I think it just people just want to make the money. They don't care about product. Kind of commenting on what I said a couple of minutes ago, but I'm trying to say it with oomph.
Articulate.
Oomph. Hence the scripture.
Just.
They didn't fare well.
Keep it simple, silly.
But that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I'm not exact. It's one of those things where it kind of obviously ties my tongue because I don't know what else I could say about it at this point of what I haven't said already. But it's just like they're making good money. So in their eyes, it's like, why change anything? But I feel also that when you got a movie that isn't as accessible as a PG-13 movie, for instance, like a Deadpool, that made almost as much money domestically as BVS did on a much smaller budget, there's a lot more value you can get in these things if you kind of get to the core and represent the characters the way people, what makes those characters what they are, and you get the repeat value of moviegoers. Do you know, like I feel some of these characters, they're the most recognizable fictional characters in our lifetime. I don't think anything trumps some of these characters that DC owns, and for them to not be having the staying power, I guess, and the creative
I don't think impact. They're looking at it as an investment.
And
I don't think they're looking at it that way, because if you think about it, let's say the Star Wars franchise, that's a story, I think, that's being told. That's been being told for the past 30 years plus. We have a guy, we have a girl, they tend to be related. Guess what? The bad guy's related to. There's some kind of history there.
Right.
And it wasn't entirely rushed. In fact, the fact that they were family wasn't even revealed until afterwards. Like, there's a build-up.
But now
Star Wars is killing it left, right, and center. That's an investment in storytelling. You may not see the initial big bucks in the beginning, but now having...
But you did see the big bucks. That's why they keep making them.
You did, but you said, well, they still make money. But you're not looking at beyond how much...
But here's the thing, though. Along with the Star Wars, with that thing, is that look at what the prequels did. How quickly you can ruin something if you don't get it back to where it should be, is what I'm saying.
But the only reason those prequels made it there was because there was a good story behind it.
Right. You're absolutely right. But if you don't continue on with the quality of what it is that you're making, those movies could make, you know, people forget those prequels made good bank, but they almost, they could kill whatever good comes out of it if that's the last taste that you leave in their mouth. You know what I mean? So it's like, just because you made money, going along with what you're saying, I agree with you completely. Just because you're making good money, at the end of the day, if you don't treat it like with some sort of respect and investment so that it has that long-lasting replay value, could this, in the end, be more of a detriment to them and to their line of product? That's what I'm wondering, like, overall. Because they can't reboot this the way they did the comic books, like, with the rebirth and tie it into some sort of narrative. People aren't going to... Don't look at movies that way. Do you know what I mean?
But isn't that what they kind of did with the X-Men? They kind of revamped it.
They kind of did. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I don't think it's an impossibility, but it's more of an annoyance as a viewer. It's like, wait a minute. So what story am I following now?
Yes.
Does this not exist? Oh, is this... However, it's the same actor playing the same person. I mean, it can get messy.
Yeah.
It's not an impossibility, but it's not as clean.
It's true, yeah. That's a good example. The X-Men is a good example. And that's starting, I feel, to run its course. The X-Men franchise is kind of like, okay, where are we? What's happening now?
And then with the new ones, didn't they try to wipe out everything after that?
I'm not exactly sure what... I really hope that this Wonder Woman movie is that little bit of shining light in the franchise, the movie franchise, to be like, okay, there's a good one that everyone can, and especially because it's her first movie ever. Mm-hmm. You really want it to represent and do justice to female superheroes, like the female character that never has really been properly represented in that genre. For that, like, it would make me really happy if that was the best one of the bunch. So for them to kind of mess that up would be a bit of a heartbreaker.
Isn't she supposed to essentially? I mean, I know we have Black Widow and there's, I don't know, but isn't this the first solo female superhero?
Yes, yes,
yeah, exactly. Man, that's a shame. I like.
That's what I mean. Like, this is kind of the one where I'm hoping that it goes against the current reputation.
Yeah.
And I want them to treat it with a little bit more respect. And it's still early enough where it's like, okay, let's right the ship if we can. Because if they do one or two more of these, you know, stinkers, even though they make money, it's like, are we just going to be these movies?
But that's the thing. It's like the Leafs, you know? It's like the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now they have a young team and they're kind of building, but for how many years, the city has such loyal fans that as crap as they are, people still show up.
Yeah.
So yeah, at the end of the day, they're still making product, they're still making money, they're still handing out contracts when it's not deserved. Yet, we can't help but go and support because, oh, that's my city, that's my team. In this case, it's like, oh, that's my superhero, that's my niche. I, good or bad, I at least want to see what they did with it.
Yeah, some people are happy to exist.
Some people, yeah, they're just, like, with Suicide Squad, like, it was terrible. But some people are like, oh, you're crazy, it's so good. It really wasn't. But you have those people that are just happy it was done.
Right.
And perhaps told a story that they were waiting for. They were happy with it. And they're going to continue supporting these movies that, you know, for some fans, it doesn't really sit well with them.
Yeah, it's one of those things where when you look at the upcoming years, now that DC has their own franchise going, because before it was very Marvel heavy, it could become one of those things where you feel like every month there's one of these kind of movies, another, you know, comic book related movie, and now other companies are getting their foot in the door and their brands, like I know the Valiant comic book company has optioned a couple movies with Sony. So you're going to not just be getting Marvel, DC. Now you're going to start getting these other companies and publishers putting their product out there. And they're good stuff, but can it become like fatigue? Like, oh, here's another one. Like, to the point where it ruins everything.
I don't think so. Because at the end of the day, a feature film is an escape. And whether it's based on a true person's life, whether it's in space, it's a monster movie, people just want a moment to disconnect from the world and see the world from someone else's eyes, through someone else's eyes. So the movie business ain't hurting.
No, not the movie business.
But I mean in this genre of comic books or mm-hmm. this type of entertainment, mm-hmm. It's always gonna be welcomed. I don't think anyone's ever going to be there. Enough already.
Yeah, the bottom line is
dollar. As soon as they say, oh, I already know about the Guardians of the Galaxy, but now they say part two. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I'm already there.
Right.
I'm already there. I don't think it's... No, I don't think there's a thing worry. To it. No.
Okay. Fair enough. We'll wait and see this summer. Wonder Woman. And then Justice League next year, too. Isn't that weird?
That I'm not excited about. I'm worried more about that. Even with this news, I'm more worried about Justice League than I am about Wonder Woman. But this... Here's hoping. Here's hoping.
Yeah. Speaking of female superheroes, and we just touched on Valiant. You like that segue? I brought up Valiant Comics. You recently read your first Valiant book. Tell us what it was. As Daphne's doing her hair and has a mouthful of hair in...
I'm trying to hold it with
even
my
know.
Clip.
You...
I got it. Ask me again. I'm ready now.
What book did you read from Valiant, Daph?
I read Faith, which is very connecting to the scriptures that I was referring to before.
What are you...
I'm just saying... It works. It meshes.
Okay, I'm gonna have to redo the intro to the podcast and put some sort of like, I don't know.
You say that, but then you're too tired to even bother with it. So
don't even. No, I gotta change what the podcast is about because you keep tying in like biblical references here. The character's name is Faith Herbert.
Herbert with a B or a V?
A B. Did you read the book?
Okay, can I tell you something?
Tell me.
I didn't finish it.
What?
I didn't finish it.
I thought you finished it.
No.
You didn't finish it. You didn't finish this book.
I didn't finish it.
So I'm bringing up this book, and you put it on the table and made it seem like you were done. And I said, so did you like it?
Wait, did I finish it? Can I see the back page?
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Daph J.
Let me see. Where's
how can you speak with authority?
Nope, I didn't finish it.
Well, we'll get back to this.
No. I think this is a very genuine way
to give your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, Daph J.
I think the simple fact that I didn't finish it, nor remembering that I finished it, is a statement on how I felt on it.
Continue.
I didn't know what was going on. What was happening?
So, okay, elaborate on that. Was it because you weren't familiar with this character and it just, you didn't connect to it because you never recognized her or the universe from anything you knew, so it was hard for you to feel involved? Was that part of it?
I felt like it was hard for me to follow because there was a bunch of, I guess, references to a bunch of other people who weren't really in her life, but they played some kind of significance. Maybe one of them was her boyfriend. Mm. I was like, heh? And then, you know, she's kind of talking with someone in code via FaceTime or text or something. And I didn't know what role was. I knew she was a hero. I knew she was keeping it under wraps. Mm.
I get you.
I know that she had a secret identity. Right. But it was kind of like, I'm not sure who I'm following here. What am I?
You felt like you didn't get on the ground floor.
No. Okay. Yeah, it made it difficult to stay invested and continue on with the story. Now, it could very well be that I was just distracted, like I couldn't focus while reading it.
Right.
But because there was so much going on around me and in the story, it was kind of like I don't know what's going on. So I put it down and I think I just forgot to pick it back up again because I was uninterested in something that I wasn't invested in.
Okay. That's a very fair point. I thought maybe that would be something that would affect you. I wasn't sure because I have read it, but I haven't read it recently enough to be like, oh, I wonder if this is gonna go over her head. I thought by the time you got to the end of it you would have some questions, but I was interested in seeing how you felt about the character itself and the representation of how faith and who Faith represents as a superhero, not being your typical cookie cutter character that is, you know, a bombshell.
She's not your Wonder Woman.
She's not that comic book superhero, female superhero who is sexualized or exploited for her female form. You know, like you think of a Power Woman and she's got the cleavage window.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you think of Wonder Woman in the bathing suit pretty much. You know, it's always done in a way that is trying to use that.
It's sexified.
It's very. That's the word I'm looking for. Whereas Faith is a full figured woman, and she looks like, you know, your everyday average person. Which I feel when I first picked it up, I'm like, this is kind of cool that it's a character who a lot more of us can relate to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the attitude and the world she lives in is the world outside of our window.
Yeah,
it's much more mirroring what we recognize as the real world, for lack of a better term. And so I was wondering how you would connect with it on that level, if it would keep you interested in what she represented as a character.
But if, you know what, though, too, based on what I did read, as much as you're saying, well, she's relatable and this and that, and at the end of the day, even her true self wasn't even her true self. Like, she was still in disguise. She was in disguise trying to be normal. I guess like a Clark Kent situation. She was in disguise trying to be normal, but she was herself when she was a superhero. But that part is unrelatable. I can't be a superhero.
Right.
But I can't show up at the office and pretend to like being there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not that I'm saying that I don't like my work. Because some people at work listen to this podcast. I'm not shaming my work. I'm just saying, like, everybody has a thing where, like, oh, I have to go to work. Like, you know, like, you're tired. You have a thing. Like, it's relatable being tired. Or, oh, there's a deadline, the stress. Like, that's relatable. But even then, it's like, what kind of stress is she under? She can just do her thing and
that's an interesting point because well, we're talking about this book thinking that everybody knows what it is, so I'm just gonna give a
very yes, you should probably read give that. Please tell us
yeah
this
yeah.
book is about.
So we are getting to Paper Girls Part 2, but I wanted to touch on this book before I totally forget what I read and Daph J forgets what
she didn't read
apparently. So Faith is it's a valiant book, great company to pick up any of their books if you're interested. Have no fear. It's a trusted quality brand. But Faith is their first, it's the first line of how can I put it? Blah, 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 blah. She was part of a team and now she has a book of her own. She's a female superhero who is very...
Has a book of her own?
It's her own title. This
Wait
is her
a minute.
First
so
own
they,
title.
The actual superhero team that they reference to, they actually have a
yes. Oh. Yes, yes. That's a whole line of... And I have them if you want to read it.
Well, but I wasn't... Hold the phone.
Right.
I don't even know about that. I didn't realize that. I thought it was yes. fabricated. Oh, I used to be part of a team.
No, no.
Oh, no. So they actually literally...
Yes.
Gave
yes.
her her own thing.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's kind
of
cool.
Right. All the characters in this book... Book. This is she's part of a comic book universe. Valiant is a universe like DC or Marvel. So all of these characters are characters that she's tying in to everything else that you see me read from Valiant.
Okay.
So she was so. Let
so
me,
it's like a Justice League, but Aquaman right. has this thing.
She was part of let's say the X-Men.
Okay.
That's what she was a part of, the equivalent of. So I'll give the quick synopsis at the beginning of this book. So, when a car accident left her orphaned, Faith Herbert was raised by her loving grandmother and found comfort in comic books, science fiction movies, and other fantastic tales of superheroes. In her teens, she would discover her fantasies were reality when it was revealed she was a Psyot, a human being born with incredible abilities. Imbued with a telekinetic ability to fly and a companion field that allows her to physically move objects, Faith joined a group of fellow Psyots called the Renegades, to stand against the forces of evil. She's since left the Renegade family behind to take on the world's challenges on her own. She may have a lot to learn about the superhero game, but if there's one thing she's always had, it's faith. So this is picking up on, as a solo story, her leaving the team that she was a part of.
Well, why didn't you lead with that? Well, you should have told me just underneath the cover.
Did you read that? It's on the first page.
No,
FJ.
No, I go straight to the bubbles.
Okay.
I just figured
it's important to read, you know, sometimes the back, see what the book's about.
I never do that. It never occurs to me to do. You want to know why? Because I always associate the words on the outside of the cover just being writers, drawers, inkers.
Just information about who made it.
You know,
it.
Ads.
Okay.
I'm just like, yeah, skip it.
Get right to the
get
right
in
to
there.
The book. Yeah.
Yeah. It never occurred to me. I should probably do that.
You should. And I really think that I tell everybody this now that I've been hooked onto it. The Valiant comic book universe is one that is extremely engaging. All the characters are... It's like the Netflix of comic books. Almost everything on it is above average to superb. Like the quality of art, the writing, the universe they build. It becomes very accessible very quickly. And I think if you read... you know, the team or the book that she was in called Harbinger, which is kind of like, it's not an X-Men ripoff, but it's the easiest comparison of what the conflict is within the book. You would get immediately sucked into it. And it, like I said, these characters live in a much more relatable world than the DC or Marvel world. It represents more of what we see outside our window. So she's a superhero who's really happy to have the powers because she's a fangirl.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to Comic Cons or mm-hmm. she works for what's the equivalent
like
of
a blogging,
like the TMZ of comic books, and we have something called Bleeding Cool in real world. There's a site called Bleeding Cool that kind of does the blogging of comic book news and stuff, and that's where she works. So it's like
she blogs for comics.
Yeah, she's just involved in like all of fandom in her day job, and so that's why she loves putting on the disguise.
Well, no wonder she's happy.
Right, that's why she's so happy with her work. So she's a superhero who's happy to be a superhero, but also learning how to do it and trying to be comfortable in her skin. And
oh, no wonder they were talking about her, and I guess the. Now that makes sense, because I think there's a part where her and her co-workers were talking about, did you see Faith over the expressway, 404, something like that? And I'm like, it just kind of came out of nowhere, but now it makes sense if that's their line of work to talk about these certain characters, and that's not out of line for them to say that.
Right.
Because then they started talking about how so-and-so used to be with this person.
Right.
Or she started talking about her ex, how weird it was to talk about her ex, but not really talk about him, or not know anything about him.
So there is a history that if I did let you know about it,
it's not your fault. I mean, I can read. I just choose not to.
But I wanted to give you this book. Not to be like, oh, it's a female character, so I want you to read about a female character. But I feel like this could be something that...
You have a girl part, and she has a girl part. You might like this one. No, he didn't come at me like that.
No, but it is kind of that thing of how does it... You're always reading these books where it's very male-centric and...
It is male-dominated, for sure.
And also when
people... But this whole world is like that.
And even the writers of a lot of these books are predominantly male. So now to get a nice representation of a female character is a refreshing sort of, it's a breath of fresh air. So for you, being a sometime comic book consumer, how you would enjoy reading something like that represented more of the average person and not the sexified typical comic book bombshell. And I really liked it. I thought maybe you would too, but it's...
Well, I'm willing to give it a chance, kind of now knowing where to steer my mind.
Okay.
You know how sometimes when you're just not prepared for something, so you just kind of... You go with the motions, but your heart isn't in it.
Right.
And so you kind of... You're like, yeah, I'm doing it, but there's a little bit of resentment. You're not in it.
Okay.
But kind of knowing a little bit of she's a real person in this world that was attached to this situation, and this is what she does for work. Like, it's like taking the pieces. Having this discussion is taking the pieces and putting them together like a puzzle.
Right.
So I think I'll try to give it another shot.
Yeah.
I'll see.
The cool thing about Valiant that I've said before is that they crisscross with each other so that you can get introduced to a lot of the different things that are existing in that universe. Like the villain The villains she fights in this book are actually villains related to the Exo Man of War that you see me read. They're not her direct villains. So they do things in these books that purposely kind of make you go, that was a cool character. I want to read his book. And then the book that you read from them is usually really, really good. So you stick with that one. It's a very interesting way of getting
you. It's very business savvy.
Business savvy, but it's also done in a way that is friendly, reader friendly. Because you don't have to read that if you don't want to. The story will continue without it. But if you do, it just adds to your experience.
Right.
So I guess that if you had read Harbinger, you probably would have been more affectionate, I guess, towards Faith.
Mm-hmm.
In your what's going on in her life now.
Yeah.
So maybe I should hit you up with the Harbinger after you read this.
How thick is it?
It's like this.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's like that.
All right.
And it's good. It's good.
Sorry, I feel like...
That's okay.
I want
your honest opinion. That's the point, is that you talk about it. I don't want you to like everything. I'm going to recommend to you things that I like, because I wouldn't want you to read something.
I know, but we're a team.
But that's like okay. That's the point, is that you got a different perspective. That's the best part.
No, I know. It's just I know, too, that... And this is a very biased opinion, but I feel like the things that you tend to recommend or that you bring into the home or the cave, they're very well selected. I don't think you're just picking anything out of nowhere just because. So when you recommend something, I'm like, oh, he knows what I like. He knows what my preferences are. He's not going to recommend junk.
Right.
So when I'm like, I don't know about this, and I don't know how to tell him, it's like, eh, let's just hope it doesn't come up. But then it kind of did just now, right, a little bit.
I threw it in there.
But I'm, you know, it's nice to be able to say it. I know what you mean. Like, I'm not always going to like what you like. But because a lot of our likes are similar, it was more surprising to me for me to be like, I don't know about this. But I am going to give it another chance. Now that I kind of have, there's a background or there's a backstory that I kind of understand a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that you'll really like other things you read in the Valiant comic book universe, I think. We shall see. Let's move on to our next topic at hand. Paper Girls 2. So you read the first one. You were confused as heck. Then we talked about it and you were on board. Because I kind of broke it down for you in a way to see it, the bigger picture, or to help you understand what's happening. Now we left off in the last book with them being thrown into time into 2016. Last year. Because it's now 2017. And it was quite a good cliffhanger, if I say so myself. I love the time travel. And this one kind of does a twist on the time travel I'm used to. Because in my Back to the Future time travel mind, you can't run into your own self because you'll go into shock and cause a paradox. But in this one, she runs directly into herself. Erin Tang, one of the main characters of Paper Girls, runs into a 40-year-old version of herself. How did you find the experience this time around having a little bit of an investment in the Paper Girls universe? Staff J, take it away.
Oh, look at you have notes.
I made a few, yeah.
Go for it.
No, I want to get your impression on it. These next five issues, how did you find the experience? Are you still on board?
I got nothing. I got nothing.
You came tonight to the podcast with nothing to offer except the wrong scriptures. Oh my God.
I'm so sorry. I feel ill-equipped to be speaking on this topic.
But I'm happy you have the personality.
I can't. I mean, I read it. It wasn't like Faith where I'm like, heh? I don't know about this. This I took very personal. I'm like, Damn it to hell, I'm going to get it done. You know what I mean? I'm going to get through this sucker, whether I like it or not. I'm going to do it. I was just like, I can't. I took it real personal. I'm like, is there something not, like, there's no sparks in my mind. Like, something's not clicking. Like, it was just a very hard story to follow. I'm just like, what is happening? There's hockey sticks sticking out of the sky. There's another doppelganger.
How tired are you when you're reading this? That's the question. When you're reading this, because you're doing it on your commute, are you like dozing off, fighting through it?
Okay, when I do doze off though, I don't play. I'm like we can wait, and I'll take my cat nap, mm-hmm. mouth open and everything on the train. I'm business. But when I'm reading, I'm actually like, okay. But after I don't know what's happening.
That's okay though, because.
But no, this is really, if I feel offended. This book offends me. Because, like I said, it makes me doubt my own intelligence. I feel like everyone is talking about how so good, it's so good, and it's award-winning, and then I'm like, how come I don't get to feel that? Like, you know, someone commented on our Instagram there about how Paper Girls is, like, wicked. And I'm like, are you reading the same thing I'm reading? Because I want your copy. I don't understand it.
So when you're... Okay, here's the question. When you're going through the book, right? Because this is a common comment on the book. I don't know what's happening yet.
Okay, so it's not just me.
No. People are putting it together. You're putting it together as you read it. As you read it, it's like watching a television show and you're saying, I'm slowly putting together what the heck is happening.
Okay, but you see, okay, kind of, I know we're talking about this, but what I'm trying to say is what we're talking about before. You see how there's time to tell a story, whether as ridiculous as it is and as confusing as it may be, they pace themselves, as opposed to in movies, it's kind of like, this is what's happening, now you're confused, let's do this, let's throw somebody else in there, let's give it an ending.
What trips me out with all the snapping reaction is that you are able to explain Inception.
I am? I can?
You watch it enough to be like, this movie's great.
It is fantastic.
It's so good.
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant. One of your favorite movies.
It's tremendous.
Yeah.
Storytelling and acting.
And you watch it again and again.
And every time I watch it, I learn something new.
Right. Exactly.
So, that has definite rewatch value.
Yeah.
That movie.
And I feel like I've had the advantage of having read this as it came out, and I've read it again in collected form. And it's been a much more enjoyable... I enjoyed it the first time, but it's been much more enjoyable.
How was it for you? It was enjoyable? You weren't frustrated? You weren't like, what?
I was a little bit like, what? Because there's nothing that says, this is a story about time travel. This is a story about dimension hopping. There's nothing that... No giveaway. There's no spoiler at all with it. It's just you buy into it. You're on board. And you're traveling. It's almost like you're experiencing with the characters what they're experiencing. That's the joy I get out of this book with the four girls, is that as confused as you feel, so are they. And you're putting pieces together as much as they are. So for you to not know exactly what it is that's happening, who the bad guy is, who to trust, who not to trust, that's part of the experience, is that you're living it with them. And you start to learn things about them that they're learning about themselves. Do you get what I'm saying? As they went into the future, imagine that experience of being, you got to put yourself in the shoes of these 12-year-old kids from the 80s delivering newspapers, right? Now take yourself from, we were, 5 years old during that time, 88, 89. Going to the movie theaters was exciting. And everybody had a tube television, The biggest TV you would see was maybe a 30-inch, if that. So imagine now, 5-year-old self having gone to watch Batman, Michael Keaton in the theater. And now you go into 2016 and you see posters of Superman, Batman. Like, what would that do to your mind? And to encounter 33-year-old version of yourself. That experience is what these girls are literally like, what language are you guys speaking?
No, I get that.
And that's part of what you're meant to kind of feel with these characters, to compare. Like, if younger you, as Erin, meets her older self, right? Now let's put you in Erin's shoes. Because these four girls, if you listen to Paper Girls, if you haven't listened to the Paper Girl 1 episode, maybe you should, to know what we're talking about. But the four girls from 1988 are now transplanted into 2016, being chased by monsters in their era, not knowing what's happening. There's some type of alien invasion, it would seem, or some sort of time lapse where people from the future have come into their time to do something, and they can't figure out what it is. So while they're on the run and kind of disturbing whatever plans and plots that these people have from the future, they get transported into the 2016 themselves. So they're messing everything up. But now Erin, who's the main one of the main characters of the book, encounters her 40-year-old self. Now put yourself, Daft J, in the if it was, 12-year-old Daft J meeting 32-year-old Insane Mercenary. What do you think that interaction would be like? Would you be embarrassed as an older version to be like, oh my goodness, I can't imagine what my younger self thinks of me?
Heck no.
Or would your younger self look at you and be like, wow, you're so awesome?
Absolutely.
But in a serious way.
I'm being serious. Being really serious. Do you not see my life? Like, this is fabulous.
You would just love yourself.
Look at this mane I have. I still got my hair.
You're not expected to
I got no kids, okay? but I'm in this cave with toys and books and colors. Like, You know what I mean? No one's telling me what to do, but I still have an onus of responsibility. I'm clean. I'm not a drunk. I'm not living in the street somewhere. I'm pretty proud of the little life that I've built right now. You know, I have a puppy. Okay, she's 8 years old now, but she's a puppy to me. Like, I got a pet. I got my best friend. I got, you know what I mean? Like,
life is good.
I know how to snowboard. I know, is a very loose word.
Loose term.
Okay?
That's the Twitter version.
Okay? But, you know, I can do it.
Okay.
I can get down the hill. You know, we've traveled. Like, I've done things of myself that I feel proud of. And there's certain things that I know that I've encountered in my personal life where I'm like, you know what? It's only made me a stronger, better person. I genuinely would be happy encountering me.
I would
be happy to tell this kid, saying, you know what, it's gonna get dark sometimes, but it's gonna be okay. Like, I would feel comfortable having that. It would be a shock for sure. I'm not taking away from that. But the encounter, I'd be like, you know what, it's gonna be good.
It's gonna be all right.
Just hang in there.
How do you think, and this is really, really hard to do, but I like posing this question. How do you think we would react seeing our future? Because we have in our, like, when
we
I was...
We envision something very different when we're kids.
Yeah, I saw 2015 Back to the Future. Like, that's what I thought the future would be like, right? If there would even be a future.
See, the thing is, I think as an adult, I'm happy with my life.
Right.
I don't know if the little me would agree. Mm-hmm. I think there would be some kind of some kind of peace of mind when the older me says, look, it's gonna be good, don't worry. It's the little one that would have been like, you know, because when we're kids, we want to be an astronaut, we want to be a cowboy, we want to be like was that just me that wanted to be a cowboy? But you know what I mean, like, you have all of these stars that you can reach when you're at that age. You know what I mean? And
time seems infinite.
Absolutely. And yeah, there's so many options. And depending on what family you live in, you got that encouragement that says, yeah, whatever you want to be. You want to be a doctor. You want to be a lawyer. You want to be, you want to be a marine biologist. Go for it.
Sky's the limit.
Anything you want. And perhaps what they envisioned is like, well, this is kind of a downer. But at the end of the day, when they see that, you know what, this person is still happy, the person's healthy, the person is making the most out of their life, and as simple as it may be, or as extraordinary as it may be, they love it.
Yeah.
It's gonna be good either way. I think it takes its perspective in the beginning, but then, I don't know, that one-on-one...
It's such an interesting premise, because it's very rare that I remember a lot of time travel books where, you know, the people, they're not superpowered encountering each other a lot of time. Like, there isn't some sort of, you get what I'm saying? Like, most superhero books, or comic books, not superhero books, but in comic books, when there's some sort of time travel, there's a power that the other person is coming with, or... But in this case, there's just two regular, one's a kid, one's an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing is the use of technology that is suddenly...
Or, sorry to interrupt you, but what if I grew up wanting to be a professional athlete? What if I was in Little League and did all this stuff, and then something happened where I can't play as a professional hockey player or a soccer player, or, you know what I mean? Like, what if I had an accident? Like, it may just not turn out the way you expected it, but depending on the person, you make the best out of your real situation.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was still listening to myself. You were saying?
I forget.
You were talking about encountering yourself.
Yeah, in this case, it was Erin. The only thing that she was able to help her younger self and her friends with was the use of technology. And she comes to the future with this iPod Apple device that isn't quite an iPod.
Which I thought was an iPod.
Right, and
but
so
as the story goes on, it's quite big.
It's a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
And when older Erin puts her thumbprint to it,
it recognizes
her.
Yeah.
So there's some sort of connection there, and what she's able to discern from it is she's able to see some sort of map that the kids are like, "What are you looking at?"
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting premise, because even when the kids...
Which I gave myself kudos for, because I actually figured that one out on my own. I'm like, oh.
Right.
Oh, you don't see it. you're actually looking through the eyes of these little girls. You don't right. see what she's talking about, right. but
they can't grasp it.
Yeah.
Even when they see the television, they're like, "Whoa, did we win the lottery with this thing?" And it's like, "Wow, you really look back at when you were that age or coming from that time. What we consider to be affluent, you know, well off, and if we saw our lives now, how much access there is, and what we consider normal now.
Ugh,
and
it's like, so disturbing.
It is, right? And that's the, and I think that's the questions that Brian K. Vaughan is trying to slowly
introduce.
He's introduced it, but it's like, look at where we come from and how we saw the world.
Look what's happened.
And what we've become attached to, and the language that we even speak. The girls see Mackenzie, the redhead girl in this, she hears them refer to Twitter user at JoniFootball112. She's like, "What language are you guys speaking?"
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you never consider, like, we do, we have developed a certain language of technology that, you know, saying hashtag before yeah. our opinion
yeah, yeah.
suddenly makes it, like, it makes sense to us. And if you did transplant somebody from another decade, they're like, "What the heck are you guys talking yeah. about? Do you realize how ridiculous you sound?"
Yeah.
And it's essential to our survival in some ways today, and being able to communicate ideas.
Or just
and
to keep up. Even keep if you're up. Not a fan of it yourself, you find yourself kind of adapting to the change that's going on around you, because if not, you're left behind.
Yeah.
Or you're just viewed as a dinosaur.
Yeah, exactly. You got to constantly be keeping up whether you want
yeah,
to or not.
VHS doesn't exist anymore. Tape decks don't exist. Like that, even if I have, because I do have some VHSs still. VHSs.
Some people are sticking to that. There's
say
some
that
people,
three times.
VHSs, VHSs, VHSs.
Oh, well, you have to show off.
I didn't know if it was hard. I had to try.
But like that, I mean, and I actually do have a VCR player, but and that's me. I'm nostalgic that way because there's memories that I still carry and hold that can't be... I know you can transfer them over to something to make it more whatever, but you don't see... You're forced to change with the times.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was VHS with a VHS and a Blu-ray player. Then it was just Blu-rays they were selling. And now it's... Not Blu-rays... Let me tell the story right. Remember, it was just a VHS, and then it was a VHS and a DVD player. And then it was just DVD players, no more VHS. And then it was DVD players or Blu-rays. And now the majority of things is Blu-rays. So if you
4K
have...
4K now.
And there are some Blu-rays that or DVDs that we have that can't be played on a particular Blu-ray because it just the thing doesn't match. So you're coerced into moving ahead. Even if you want to dig your heels in the sand, you're going to drown. If you don't move along with what's going on around you.
Yeah. It's going to be quicksand.
Yeah. Nicely said.
So, with Erin seeing herself, and the other girls don't get a chance to meet themselves yet.
No, yes they do.
They don't meet themselves. They find out what happens to one of them.
Oh, that's
out,
right.
We're going to get into... I want to ask you that question in regards to Mackenzie. But one of the questions I have for you that I wrote down to remember is, Erin can't remember certain things anymore from her past. She knows she has that scar. She knows she was... She remembers that night. She vaguely remembers the four girls. So something has happened where... In this book, it's established that there aren't alternate universes, as people like to often use when they're, you know, there's numerous versions of yourself, that there's a different dimension, or there's like, you know, two different Batmans, Earth 1, Earth 2, and whatever with Flash, right? That's not the case with this. There's one linear timeline, and they kind of mention it, explaining it briefly of what is going on. But it was just interesting to think how you view your past now. As an older person, what parts you choose to remember, what, like, that small decision, I never spoke to those girls again, I don't think, after that night. And she tells, older Erin tells younger, her younger self, like, make sure you stay friends with them. Because I should have stayed friends with them after that night. And her memories are kind of jogged of whatever it was that happened. So it was kind of interesting to think, and seeing the younger Erin as an adult, seeing herself as an adult, it's like, why? She even says a couple times, like, stop swearing. Like, you're trying to make us sound important.
You're trying to sound cool.
Yeah. It's like, exactly. You're trying to make it mean something more. Like, you don't got to do that. It kind of made me think, we often try to impress those around us our whole lives. What would a younger version of ourselves think of us as an adult? As an adult. And that made me think, like, why don't I act in a way that would make a younger version of me be proud of myself? I never thought of that before until I kind of read this. Seeing the younger version of Erin say, stop doing that, it's not good.
But isn't that... I don't know if I'm going to say what I'm going to say makes sense. What? Isn't that kind of what our parents are supposed to be, though? Not our version, but adults that we want to... Excuse me. Huh. Adults that we are proud of and want to look up to. Don't our parents kind of fall into that?
Right, but I'm saying to what I'm saying here...
About yourself.
But it came across to me because there's that one part that I really liked in this book. Probably my favorite book. It's like the quiet moments where there's no dinosaurs chasing anybody. There's a lot of action in this book. It's not so philosophical as I'm making it out to be. But it's the one thing that
Maybe it is. If it's gearing it to this conversation, it probably does have that kind of...
Maybe. Mind depends on game. Depends on how you're looking at it, right? But she says to herself, I can only imagine, older Erin, what it must be like going through your head, seeing that we wind up being some fat, unwed loser with a dead-end job. She still works for the newspaper. And then the younger version snaps at her, is like, you're not fat, you idiot. Gross, that sounds like something Dad would say. And your haircut is cool, and I love your shirt, and I'm relieved we're not married. We could still go anywhere, do anything we want. I'm just worried that you're... And then she gets caught off because older version of herself is hugging the younger version of herself. It's like, I'm at... Like, she finally has a little bit of peace. Like, thank you for saying these things to me. And I thought that was a real, real poignant point to kind of make you sit and think. If the younger version of ourselves would be happy with who we turn out to be, if that would be enough to give us the peace that we need. Because we're always trying to make the older version proud of us, those superior to us, but we never look at it from how does the kid look at me? Do you get what I'm saying? So yeah. Not so much pleasing the parent, but as an adult saying, if younger me could see me now, how would they think of me? Would they be ashamed of who we turn out to be? Why don't I try to live to make that little person that I once was proud of who I become? It was just an interesting, because that point there where she gets that moment of peace. You want the ice cube. Daff J points to the points to the ice cube.
No, I'm listening.
Force choke coming up right now.
I love you're going to say that.
So that was my little piece about Erin.
I like it.
Is that, yeah?
I like it.
Does those little points kind of make you appreciate the book a little more? Or it's just like, whatever.
I find that I enjoy this book more discussing it over reading it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point. Because
I'm getting a different perspective and understanding on why certain things are occurring in the story.
Or why maybe people are holding it in, like, the high regard. Such regard. Because, right? Making you kind of consider
these things. I like that little point there of, like, you know, be the person you've always wanted to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Just
don't be ashamed
of who you grab life by the balls.
You in that line.
Horns?
But
like, just be
be aggressive about it.
Be happy.
In regards to the other girls, you find out something kind of, I don't know what the right word is, freaky, scary, terrifying. Mackenzie and Tiffany, the other...
Mackenzie's the one with the short hair.
Mackenzie's the one with the red hair. The other half of the Paper Girls, there's four. They're all looking for their friend KJ. That's their mission while they're here in 2016.
Because in the time travel, one of them went missing.
Right, one of them went missing. And so now they're all saying, okay, we got to figure out a way to find her. And there's clues.
Which, okay, actually, left. Sorry. One thing that I do really like is their loyalty to each other.
Yeah.
Even though they kind of just sort of met in the first book.
Exactly. It was
kind of like, listen, kid. These guys are like this. You hang with us, we'll take care of you.
Yeah.
When Aaron first appeared. Now, this whole thing happened with this chick, and they're like, we're not going nowhere until we find her.
That's a great point. I'm happy you brought that up, because I forgot to say it. That's such a adolescent thing, to become really good friends with people really fast and not have so much baggage to have to sift through to wonder if you can trust them. Right? These kids were automatically, that's our friend. We got to find them. This is the new girl. Aaron's the new girl.
Mm-hmm.
They've been friends for a few hours.
Yeah.
But they're a crew.
Yeah.
That's how kind of...
There's no preconceptions of the person. They just, this is who you are. Cool.
We're in this together. We're in it,
yeah.
And I really like that. I'm like, man, that's something I haven't experienced since I was 12. You know, you play hockey, you got a baseball glove, come play baseball with us. You're part of the crew. Like, that sort of Sandlot experience where after a day... You know, all but right,
I think what happens though is, what's the word I told you yesterday? I think it's life. Time is what gives you that hard shell and makes you a skeptic of people and things. And that word that we said that I am yesterday.
Cynical.
It makes you very cynical.
Right.
And as much as we don't want to be that person, the crap that happens to you,
yeah,
it builds you into that person that you don't want to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to be second-guessing people, but at the end of the day, can I really trust what you're saying?
Yeah.
You know, and that goes not just with people, but even just relations. Just like, you know, you want to buy a house? What's in it? You know, like, all the fine print. Like, am I really going to be getting everything they're promising me?
Yeah. And it feels like you almost have to do that as an adult making friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Some of the best friends that you have go back to when you're 12. Some of the people you like the most, right?
Me even further than that.
Right.
I'm really good friends with people that, with persons, not people. I don't have a crew, but I can generally count friends on one hand, and a lot of them are people that I've known since I was like 5.
Right.
And they're still in my life. Not just, oh, hey, we're on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Happy birthday or whatever it is that people remember to tell each other. Mm-hmm. I converse, I talk, I eat with this person. Yeah.
Right.
They're still in my home. They're still in my life.
Right.
And I think, especially with this social media world that we're in, everyone keeps up with each other, but they don't really know each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're friends. The friends on Facebook or friends on Instagram or whatever, synthetic. But you really don't know each other.
Yeah.
You don't know me. Yeah. But I'm grateful to say there are some that, even you, we've known each other for years. We grew up as kids.
Right.
And we're still homies.
Homies.
That counts for something, no?
Absolutely.
So I like the dynamic with these chicks. Like, they're like, we're a crew. We met 2 minutes in, but we're in it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. I like this page here where you see the Hillary for president.
Mm.
That was kind of ominous. Because they say, we get a girl president. No, some lady is running. Doesn't mean she's going to win. It's
Yeah. That was cool, too.
How do you know? Maybe America's already had 4 women in charge by now.
The optimism of a kid, eh?
Yeah.
They just look beyond the...
Yeah.
Negative. Like, they just...
It's all hope.
All the possibilities when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's through rose-colored lenses, as they say, right? And then as Mackenzie's going to her old house trying to find herself, she finds out her family has moved from that area, which is typical. It's, mm-hmm. No one's going to stay in the same area, but they moved after she died in 1992, which was only 4 years away from her current age. From leukemia. What a way to end that issue. Not the book, but that issue.
Yeah.
So, it made me want to ask you, if you knew you're going to die young, or that you were going to have a, there was going to, even if you had no expectation, like you weren't sick or whatever the case may be, but you knew it was going to come in 4 or 5 years, someone had said, you know, this person died, and it happened to be you, how would you suddenly start living your life? Would it change? Because Mackenzie becomes extremely reckless throughout the rest of the book. She's like, I'm not dying, so let it come after, let the monster come after me. Let him shoot at me, because
this isn't the way I'm supposed to die. I'm right. supposed to die like this.
And it's established in the first first book, Trade, that the two guys who help her out, the two guys dressed in the ninja suits, as we like to call them, they say, your death is your death. There isn't any way to mess with that. It is what it is. So in her mind, she's remembering, she goes, those guys said, you know, you die the way you die. So I'm not going to be dying today. So I'm going to do things I would never do. I'm going to jump out of this helicopter. I'm going to run from these monsters and make them chase me to save the crew. Because I'm not going to be dying today.
Yeah.
Right? So what effect would it have on you if you knew that you had a specific fate? Would you just start smoking the pack of cigarettes like she did and not care?
I think his name was... Mr. Vigilante? Vigilante? No, not vigilante. That's the word, vigilante. There was a patient in Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, brother.
What?
Bible to Grey's Anatomy.
What's his name now? Especially because we've been doing these Grey's quizzes. I feel like I should know this. He basically was, I guess, in hospice. I don't know. He was in the hospital with this disease that was killing him. And the chances of him living were slim to none. They had the opportunity to operate, but he was like, I'm not going to make it. And I want to give my final goodbyes. And then Meredith has to videotape
him. Right, I remember that.
And then she's like, okay, when you're ready. He's like, to, you know, Mary, my first love. When I saw you, you had this on. Your hair was like that. And I knew I had found the one. But when I knew that, and then he goes off. He's like, and then you were this wretch that broke my heart. And you went with my cousin. And I hope you rot in hell. And then he's like, okay, next tape. And she's like, huh?
It was all hate tapes.
Like, what?
Yeah.
And then he asked her to mail them off and said, just send it to everyone. I want them to know. Before I die, I need to clear my chest. I need to clear my conscience. He had the operation survived. And then she's like, here are all your tapes. And he's like, what are you doing? I asked you to mail them. And then she's like, yeah, but aren't you glad I didn't? Because you survived, and that would have been the last memory that people would have had of you. And he's like, I don't care. I want that fool that wanted to rip that layer of...
Mm-hmm. Anger, resentment.
Yeah, I need it off.
Right, right, right.
And now that I have this new lease on life... I'm really starting fresh. I don't want to have any regrets.
Right. What is your point? Non-Twitter. I get your point. Is that you still gotta live? Whether you're gonna live or die, you have to live with no regrets. You gotta be free.
Yes.
You shouldn't let that dictate what your decision is going to be. Is that, am I putting words into your mouth?
I love how eloquent you've actually gotten something out of this. Something so pristine and clean, because really, I was kind of delaying. I was trying to come up with an answer. I'm like, what am I going to say to this question? Let me tell a story. Let me give a diatribe. If I encounter me, say, like, knowing that I was gonna die?
Not even encounter yourself.
No, but
you just end up somewhere where you're just dead. Hypothetically, of course. It's a trip.
I feel like I don't know how to answer that question. That's which all is right. Probably why I just went on and on and on about this episode. I swear I was going somewhere with it, but then I'm like, nope.
That's why I'm here.
But I like
how you plant the seeds, I water it.
Apollo.
Oh my.
Oh my goodness. But yeah. Yeah, I kind of, for sure, live life with no regrets, but I don't know. That's a trippy question. I don't know what I would do knowing that. Oh, and you find out how it happened.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, if someone said you got hit by a car, which is very probable, because every day I'm dodging a car.
And pigeons.
And this is a whole other story. But I don't know if that would make me either fearful to live, or if I would have the same attitude as Mackenzie, like, you know what? Que sera, sera. You know what I mean? I'm just going to do... I can't stop living life. But I think some people would stop living.
Yeah, it's
so...
All these questions... That's the thing. When I'm reading this, I'm like, man, there's so many questions that are raised with what these kids are experiencing.
I want to answer your question, but I don't know
that,
how.
That's all right, though. That's all right. It's
part of... To me, honestly... The cliche answer would be like, you know what? I'd quit my job, I'd travel, right, I'd do all right. This. I guess that's the best thing. But then I also think that's kind of selfish because I'm like, well, I'm just going to do life by myself.
Yeah.
If I had that ability.
It's so easy, right?
I'd want to share my last I'd want to be with you. I want to be with my friends. I want to go on a beautiful island. Not everybody has the means or the time. Like, you're not going to stop living life because mine's ending. That's very selfish. But
yeah.
I can't help but think that would be the best thing to do with whatever time I had left.
And I think that's the point too, right? Is like you said, is she knows she's got a certain amount of time left. We don't know how much time we've got left, but we know there's a certain inevitability.
But we can't even picture that, even though we know there's an end.
But the thing is, you've got to make the most of it, right? Whenever it may
Absolutely.
Be, right? I
Absolutely.
Think that's, and sometimes we get lost in the next month, next week, wait. You know, we sometimes don't take advantage of the moment that we're in.
Right, right.
Because we always think it's gonna be there again.
That's so true.
Right?
That's
so true. I think whether you're young
Especially when you're a kid, you think you're invincible.
Exactly.
You have your whole life
ahead
of you.
And I think that affected how she was like, well, I know this is gonna happen. These aren't the thing that kills me. Right?
Yeah.
So it kind of makes you think for a second, like, let me just make the most of it. Let me do this thing while I can do it. Let me do it while I can, not... put it off and say, I'll do it next time.
Right.
And it's just little questions that aren't the biggest part of the plot, but they're moments that I feel really make this book stand
You're right.
out.
Yeah, it is. Because when you, like I said, when you bring it up, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And I remember that kind of resonated with me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't make me, like, stop, but it did make me take pause.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's a little shakeup.
Yeah.
Okay, now let me figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Like, that's the point of the book. There's an adventure, but there's moments.
Yeah.
And there's questions that they don't know the answer to. You don't know the answer to. You're living it with them. You find out someone's going to die in their future. You experience that moment of shock. You encounter your older self with the person, seeing them kind of figure out who they become, who they are. Those moments.
Yeah, yeah.
And the loyalty between them, I feel, is the highlights of this book. That amongst the...
And I think...
And the...
It's her and her friend are the only two that know that, right?
Yes. At the time, they're the only two that they experienced that together.
But
exactly.
I don't even think Mackenzie clarifies it. Didn't she just say it doesn't matter?
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. At this point, not everybody knows the inevitability of said...
Exactly.
...person.
So the long story short,
please.
In this particular volume, what they're all trying to do is have older Aaron direct them to a specific point within the city that they're still stuck in the same stony. Oh,
not Stony Creek.
Not Stony Creek. Stony Creek is in Ontario. I forget what it's called now. Where they're from. But in the same little suburb that they're from, not too far from Cleveland, there is a portal, different portals that little iPod-esque Mac
mind map
is guiding older Aaron to follow. And KJ has left some clues for them. it would seem, with her field hockey stick that she carries around with her, of where to go. And
so, hold on, before you go on. So basically, the mission in this book is find the friend. Find the fourth friend.
In this particular
find
book.
Find the fourth friend. FFF.
Right. But at the same time, the people from the future are trying to intercept the four girls.
Infiltrate.
And stop them from mucking up the timeline. So those older people that you saw in the first trade are still here. They're going through, traveling through time themselves and trying to intercept them and say, we got to get them.
But didn't they make comment that they know that they're time traveling because it's messing up the timeline, but they just don't know what timeline they're in?
Right. And they're trying to zero in on them. So the only reason why I've concluded that is there's a third version, spoilers, of Erin.
I saw a spoiler. Remember I said there's another doppelganger that comes through?
Right. And she's a facsimile, if you will. She knows that she's not the real Erin. She's a clone of the one who was of a younger version of Erin. When she was shot, she was put into that special time machine looking device that I think duplicated her. And so she's here trying to help herself. And as she's hopped into an Uber and said, take me to this location. I've got to encounter myself.
Wait, so she's from the future?
Right, she's from the future. And she's there the same way.
So none of this new technology stuff is, it doesn't faze her.
No, it doesn't faze her at all. Right, so she's, while she's in the car and they're running away. Even though she's a kid. As she comes through the timeline, a couple of things have come through it with her, namely these monsters. It kind of looks like Pacific Rim. Happening in the bay, right? Two monsters just fighting and killing each other. So they're on this bridge, they're driving away from the monsters, and this duplicate version of Erin says to the Uber driver, who she's trying to explain what the heck is going on. She goes, I don't blame you for being confused. Whatever this era's physicists have taught you about parallel realities is a bunch of garbage. There's only one timeline out there. But if you're smart, parts of it can be occasionally overwritten. See, the people who discovered all this thought that suddenly having the ability to alter the past didn't automatically give them the right to do it. But older generations are always way more conservative, huh? She goes, I don't understand what you're talking about or who you are. So I thought that was a really interesting piece of dialogue from this clone version of Erin saying, you know, in the future, we develop these things, and because we figured out how to do something, we think it gives us the right to do it. Mm-hmm. And we don't know our limits of what we should and shouldn't use.
Oh, is that what she said?
Right. Oh, basically.
Thanks for that.
Does that help you make
I know she was explaining this and that and the other, but I was like, alright, let's just move on.
And I think that's the underlying theme again of technology running throughout these stories, right? Is that there's technology always being developed that we're using in some way to what we think is our advantage, but in a lot of ways we're abusing it, and it's stuff that we don't really need because what it's doing is breaking down
the system.
Yeah, it's breaking down relationships. It's causing more, what we think is privacy is becoming more surveillance. What we think is useful to communicate is
actually ruining communication. More of a gap between right. people's and relations.
Right. So now imagine if we were able to rewrite history. Men would do it.
If they can go back and fix it all.
Right. So it's asking that question again of, yeah, you have the ability, but do you really have the right to be doing this, to be messing with this, to be using this to the capacity that you are, where it's eliminating the use of people, like everything's becoming automated in this world and in the future. As we continue to progress, there's more and more automation and less people to have to deal with. And it's slowly breaking down society as we know it.
As appealing as that sounds, though, because I don't like people in general, it sounds kind of sad.
It is sad.
And lonely.
Exactly. Which I think is kind of what makes the premise of this book and the adventure of this book something to think about, because you've got four girls who all they have is each other and a walkie-talkie, and now they're being chased by people of the future who are saying they have the potential to ruin everything that we've established because they're messing with whatever it is we're trying to do. So it's exciting to... It leaves off with them finding their friend KJ, but they don't know where they end up. They go through this portal, and they do not
know where they are. Wait, the doppelganger doesn't make it
or something. The doppelganger... They don't trust... They don't end up trusting the doppelganger.
There was a sign. There was a thing carved in...
Right.
That feels hockey stick. First of all, it said, don't trust the other Aaron.
Right.
And you don't know... Oh, that was the one.
And you don't know which one.
And they don't know. Is it the young one? Is it the 40-year-old one? Or is it the doppelganger that came...
Right.
...out of nowhere?
Right.
So they're like, which one don't we trust? And then... The doppelganger, the bad Aaron, I guess, the younger one. Was she bad?
She wasn't bad.
The clone Aaron was trying to take them somewhere. But I guess back into the future?
She was trying to take them to the future where they would be protected. And she was saying, you're going to be the ones to save the day. But
she tried to almost, kill older Aaron or attack her, or
she was saying something. Don't trust this one because she's preventing you guys from listening to me, so you don't know which one to trust, which one not to trust, but more importantly you don't know who sent the message on the field hockey stick, because they think that it's from their friend that's missing, KJ, but when they do encounter KJ at the end of the book, she's got the field hockey stick on her, she's still wearing it, so there's still questions to be answered now.
No, but Aaron, when she encountered KJ with the rest of her friends, she's like, thank goodness for your message.
But she didn't say that.
Yeah, she did.
She never said, thank goodness for your message.
Yeah, she's like, we got your Hold on. That sucks. Oh, thank God. No, I landed here a few hours ago. But your field hockey stick. Didn't you carve those messages for us?
Mm-hmm.
Mac, what the hell is this new kid talking about?
You see?
Oh.
She never sent it.
Long story. All that matters is now we're together.
Exactly.
Oh.
There you go. So, bum, bum, bum.
This Matt Wilson guy looks like your cousin. This guy in the back, the creators. Okay.
You got like the attention span of a fish.
Well, that's a step up from a gnat. I'll take it. Well, yeah, I feel like I enjoy discussing this, and now again, I'm amped up.
Now you're ever next.
Is there one more book?
It's coming, but they're on a break now.
Excuse me?
You're caught up to where...
There's not another one after this? You can't do this to me.
Nah, good.
Are you for real?
I'm for real.
You know what's going to happen.
You're going to forget.
I'm going to fall off.
You're not going to fall off because you can listen to the podcast and remember what happened.
Oy.
So did you appreciate the book now?
I appreciate the discussion. The book is very frustrating to get through. I'm glad they got all this reverence and they're so, whatever, and the art.
Cliff Chang.
Kif, yeah. Good for you guys. I want to get into it. I really do. It's just really going through it is difficult.
But that's the point of discussion, right? Is that when you're able to find people who have read or experienced something, they've experienced it in a different way than you. And they see the art perhaps in ways that you didn't see it. There's a lot of times where there's books that I'll may not have checked out or taken a second glance at because another person has said, check this out. Look at it from this perspective and you'll probably like it a bit more. And when you hit it from that angle, it's like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
That's the point, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah, it's...
So that's the cool thing about these books is that they're never late. Whereas sometimes DC and Marvel, they'll have an event that the entire company's line of comics hinges on. And that particular event is way off of schedule, but the other books aren't, so
when is this one expected then, the next one?
I'm not 100% sure, because he's writing, Brian K. Vaughan has a number of books that he writes, and so what he does in order to maintain a certain publishing schedule is, he'll probably do 5 at a time, so those 5 months, there'll be a new issue of Paper Girl coming out at the end of those 5 months. In the 6th month, they'll release this trade. And then they'll take a 2-month break, get their wheels back in motion, write a couple scripts, get the art going so that now they're on a regular schedule again, because it's going to be the same artist and writer. Whereas with Batman, they'll do three issues, and if the regular artist can't make it, they'll get a guy to fill in to be like, well, we got a deadline.
Really?
Yeah, that's the problem with the big two comics as opposed to this. This guy isn't on anyone's schedule. He's paying for it.
Yeah. It's his baby.
This, yeah, they literally pay for this product themselves. So whatever the paper quality, whatever the book binding quality is, that was their choice.
That's out of pocket.
It's out of pocket.
Wow.
Exactly. It's out of pocket.
I respect it, you know.
That's why
I respect this Valiant.
This isn't Valiant.
Sorry.
Valiant is like Marvel and DC.
What is this?
This is Image Comics.
Image. I respect the Image. I respect these independent ones.
These non-DC Marvel
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
The ones that I guess don't get the credit that they deserve.
Yeah,
however, I guess real comic book people would know that these are gems. So
yeah.
I learned that.
The only thing for me that I often mention is that with the Image Comics, this is like the Image is like the equivalent of HBO, where you'll get the best story, you'll get the best product, but a lot of times it's unfiltered. Mm. You never know what else might come in that product.
That's true.
That's the only thing that you gotta have some discretion depending on what your tastes are.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have the most wonderful narratives and you know 60 issue story arcs that are just absolute gems, but it could be as violent as you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It could be as explicit as you want it to be, whether in language or content, mature adult content. You never know.
Yeah,
so that's the only thing for me that I don't necessarily read everything that comes out from Image,
because there's no censoring,
nothing. And a lot of these, and the rub is that a lot of these guys start off writing the best superhero comics, right? That's where they make their bones or their name. So the guy who wrote, for instance, Walking Dead originally worked for Marvel and did some, I forget if it was X-Men stories. And that's where he kind of got his name for himself. This guy as well, he did some... it was called Runaways. He did a book with Marvel, Runaways, that was a hit. So a lot of these guys, the guy who wrote Captain America Winter Soldier, he doesn't do any more DC or Marvel. He's strictly an independent guy and is one of the best, biggest writers in comics till this day. But they make their name there and then they leave and do whatever they want and nobody can tell them, hey, you don't make them do that. You can't kill that character.
Yeah.
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they leave Marvel and DC because they're like, you know, I'd really like for Spider-Man and Mary Jane to get divorced. No, you can't do that. And then they say, we want them to never have been married, which is what actually happened. They're like, yeah, well, that's not a good idea. No, we want that. Okay, I have to write this horrible story because they're telling me to.
Just like the movie business. Exactly. The people with the money are the ones that control the storyline.
Yeah. So sometimes...
And it can ruin everything.
Right. And it sometimes falters... It not falters. It holds back people's creative juices.
Right. They're kind of encaged a little bit.
Yeah.
They got the cuffs on.
Yeah. And that's why something like Invincible, which I've often said before, is... arguably the best superhero comic ever.
However, there's no borders there. Like, it can go from one extreme to the other.
It's rated teen. That one's a pretty safe book. That one, it's a superhero book, so it doesn't go...
Which one are we talking about?
Invincible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just...
You're the one that told me that it got a little gory after a while.
Yes, as the book progresses, the artist has the freedom to, when you know he punches somebody, he can punch right through their stomach.
Thank you for the graphic.
Right? And they, but as far as the story of it, anything can happen, nobody's safe,
even a main character. You mean
absolutely?
Wow.
Even a main character. So someone you love, like, oh, this guy's great, he's a main character. No,
does that not piss off though? Like, you invest in someone. Like, imagine I'm not saying, but imagine someone like Batman. And all of a sudden, he just, that's it, takes a hit and he's out. That's a bit.
That's the point, though.
I don't know. I think I'd be a little ticked off about that.
But the thing is, the book is so good and it makes so much sense. It's like, I got it. Nothing that is predictable, which is part of the problem with mainstream comics is that you know if Batman dies, he's coming back. You know Superman is going to come back in time for that movie. Whereas with these books, the Image books or...
But why then even kill him off if you're just going to bring him back anyway? That's my thing.
That's the argument, right? People are like, I'm tired of that.
I was annoyed with Jay-Z, I'm going to retire. Well, no, you didn't.
Right.
Like, just stick to what you want to do and be consistent.
That's why they had certain
rules. That was probably a poor analogy.
No, it's perfect. It's like, make it matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Make it matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think now a lot of longtime comic book readers are at the point where they're like, I've read the superheroes, I grew up on that, but now I want my books to have sort of consequence. If I'm reading it and I'm investing in it, if something happens, I don't want the fact that Robin died to just be reversed in a year.
Right.
Right? If I cried reading that book, I want to make that experience authentic. Don't just take it away afterwards and be like, ah, we changed it because now we want him back.
Mm-hmm.
Which for other people, like, yay, he's back. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Which is also part of the fun of saying, you know what? Anything can happen in a superhero book too. Just because the Flash has been gone for 25 years, lost in time, doesn't mean we can't bring him back.
Yeah.
Right? So it's part of the fun of there's so much good stuff to read. I think that's the biggest, and not really a problem, but the biggest problem with comic books today is there's so much good stuff to read. You don't know what to leave on the shelf and what to read later. Because it's just, there's never been a time like this before.
And I think that's one of the things that I've learned as a outsider. I mean, I know Batman, Superman, I know Captain America. Like, I know the big ones, you know what I mean? But I never looked beyond DC and Marvel. Yeah.
Me neither, not for a long time. And at
least, if there's one thing I can take away from doing this with you, it's that there's such variety.
Yeah.
All over the place. And it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. Nice. Nicely done. Good job. Two thumbs up.
You weren't sure what you read in either book that we discussed. None of it. But we got through it and maybe you liked it a little more. I'll just tell you about that from now on. Just show up here and I'll tell you what I've read. Thank you everybody for listening to another episode of the Cave of Solitude. Hopefully you liked our insight in getting into a little bit of Valiant and Paper Girls and also Wonder Woman. This is our all woman episode.
Hey, look at that.
There you go. So it was just gonna be Paper Girls too, but I think it's cool that we discussed a bunch of different things as we've talked for quite a while. Nice catching up with you, Daft J. Good for you to show. I'll see you in a month. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Email us at kofsolitude@outlook.com.
Ooh, you know what you haven't asked me in a while?
What haven't I asked you in a while?
Oh my goodness, I just forgot.
Email us at kofsolitude@outlook.com. Follow us on Facebook and leave a review on iTunes. It helps to get the show out there. More people have to hear the humor of the insane mercenary that is Daft J.
And make sure to also visit your friendly neighborhood Cyber City Comics.
Well, look at you giving the plug.
Why not?
And leave a review on iTunes.com, people.
It just helps spread the word.
Spread the word.
It's just as fun for us as it is for you. Until next time, keep fit and have fun. Right?